So in lieu of a sermon today, I wanted to share some reflections as we prepare for Yizkor. It's a nice confluence of a few significant moments in the Jewish calendar. The last days of Passover, the Omer, today being the seventh day, and the reading of Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, which, if not graphic, clearly sensual imagery, discomfited our sages enough that they insisted it be read as allegory. The Omer. I'm not sure if it's the simplest mitzvah we do, but it's certainly simple. You stand, say a few dozen words, you count for 49 days, and yet I have only succeeded in completing the count once in 15 years. It's a deceptively simple mitzvah. When we think about loved ones, above all, among them, those who are deceased, those who are no longer with us, so much of love, so much of friendship and fellowship and family is detail. Small moments, watching your children dress up, attending to your parents as they age, that diligence that's required to tend to and foster a relationship, and we never do it enough. We never call our parents often enough on the phone. We never say, I love you enough. We never meet all the requirements of being a good parent, a good spouse, a good child, a good niece. The things that love requires from us, that we required of relationship, are often small and daily. And therein is the difficulty. It's consistency. Not always so easy. And then, I don't know if I've said this to you, and it's a little untoward for a rabbi to say this, but to me, Passover is the holiday that it overstays its welcome. By about day five, I become particularly irritable. When I was in rabbinic school interviews, I was asked, you know, which mitzvot are hard for me, and I said kashrut, because at my heart, I'm a chazar. I'm a pig. I like to eat everything. And I don't mind a fast. I'm quite fond of Yom Kippur. But having 7 or 8 days, depending on where you are, where you can only eat certain things, you're effectively on the Atkins diet with matzah, I find very infuriating. I certainly resent the holiday by the end. So I love matzah brei, but there's only so much matzah brei you can eat. And to anyone who was here last night, I was very excited because I thought of all the horrible Passover food, this Shabbat dinner that Marilyn, Pat, and a few others have worked on will be the best possible Passover meal, which is still some notches below any other meal. So this was quite a lovely meal. I don't want to cast any aspersions on it. It was a really phenomenal night we had here. So as I've said on Yom Kippur and at various other times, sort of my working space in the mitzvot in Jewish life is not to ask, oh, where does this mitzvah come from? Whence do we observe the Pesach? Was it a rite of our ancestors? Why no chametz? Was it something connected to the temple service? Was it something connected to differentiating ourselves from other peoples? I'm less interested in the homiletical or anthropological origins of our practices than I am in what it has to do for us now, what the effect is on us today. And like I've said over Yom Kippur, I don't think the fast and the difficulty and the lightheadedness we might feel on Yom Kippur, the strangeness we might feel of wearing different shoes, of not wearing a suit to synagogue, of not showering, of not using perfume or cologne, of not having intimate relations, of not eating or drinking water, that disorientation is spiritually uplifting and enlightening. And I don't have the answer about Pesach, but it seems to me that that discomfort I feel around my food and the effort and work it takes to prepare for Pesach, and frankly, tonight, to put all your dishes back. I don't know if it's worth the pizza tomorrow. But I think there is some spiritual lesson to be learned in discomfort and frustration. That life isn't easy. That most good things don't come to us without struggle and sacrifice. That love and relationship, again, as we prepare for Yizkor, require sacrifice, require tension, require working to serve another person and to be sad when they are ailing, and to help them pick up the dishes, and to constantly be in relationship with another, whether it's a friend or a parent or a spouse or a girlfriend, is an effort, is a continual effort and sacrifice of one's own prerogatives. You might like to go all the way to have all the food you want, but you don't get every slice of pizza. Though, I think it was in The Simpsons where Homer confessed his love for Marge because she always gave him the last slice of pizza. Those tendernesses that I think it was Arnold or, was it your father who used to say that marriage is an 80-20 proposition?
No, he said marriage is a 50-50. Here's my father. Marriage is a 50-50 proposition. Sometimes you have to give 80%. Sometimes you think you're giving 80%. You're only giving 20%.
Yeah. And I've heard sort of similar statements of, you know, you don't give 50-50, you give 80 or 100% and just hope that it's returned. That's a piece of the nature of life. And then I'd like to focus on Shir HaShirim, which is one of my favorite sections of the Bible. There's beautiful poetry there, really rich. In some places, even richer than the Psalms. But of course, extremely sensual and sexualized. And our sages weren't easy. They was not comfortable with that. They didn't understand how a holy book or a book that was sort of in the corpus, if not yet canonized, in the corpus of holy writ and holy publication and sung regularly by the people and listened to and perhaps eventually read by the majority of Israelites could be holy. So over the centuries and probably even millennia, they made it allegory. So where it speaks of the beauty of a woman, it's transformed into the beauty of Torah. Where it speaks of the attraction between two human beings, our sages transform that into the desire for the people Israel to grow close to God. When it talks about the people, the lovers running to each other from the distance, that's a metaphor or symbol of our exile in Egypt and return. When it talks about the difficulties in the relationship, that's symbolic of Nebuchadnezzar and the destruction of the temples. Although if you also understand Song of Songs to be written by Solomon, precedes those issues, but he was also a prophet in the sage's eyes. So a piece I've struggled with, and if you're curious to see this, you can look in the Rashi commentary. He kind of anthologizes the majority of allegory about Song of Songs, and you can find that in quite a few places online, and if you want to speak to me after Shabbat, I can indicate an easy place to see it all. But my rabbi, Daniel Shevitz, thinks that it's not just our sages, our rabbis, our ancestors' sort of willfulness about the scripture, but he thinks it's contained in the love poetry of Song of Songs, the allegory itself. And I've always struggled with his statement about that. He never quite explained it to me, but I think part of what he's saying is that every love is somehow an encapsulation or a reflection of God's love. And likewise, we learn of God through the love we experience through our parents, through different loves and relationships we have in our lives, sibling, romantic, professional. We think and understand the way God might be acting in the world through the individual relationships we have. So, allegory or no, Song of Songs as a parable about the love God has for the Jews or the love God has for all humankind, in some ways isn't such a stretch. That psychology and theology are refractions of each other. or fractal pieces of each other. So I think as we think about our deceased loved ones, and we think of what they taught us about God, and if you struggle to believe, as most of us at different moments do, at least what they taught you about the world and the meaning of life. Some were good, some relationships were difficult, that can't be helped, and some were probably both. Many were probably both. There is probably very few unalloyed, easy relationships in one's life. There are always moments where you'd probably like to put a pillow over someone's head. Thank you for laughing. Thank you for that. I didn't mean you should do it. I just mean, you know the great joke? I'll tell a joke. This is not apropos to Yusker, but you know, when you're really tense or you have a fight with someone, you should picture like a clear river, and it's cool, and there's a beautiful breeze, and there are birds chirping, and you can feel your hands in the cold water, and this is the meditation you do, and the water is reflective, and you can barely see the face of the person you're holding under the water. don't do that, though. But, you know, sometimes after a board meeting, not me, but two of you. So that's it. I mean, that's the truth, is that love and relationships are hard. And what we learn about God and what we learn about the world through love and through parents and sisters and brothers and neighbors isn't always easy. It isn't always unfragmented or unfreighted. It isn't always light and joyful. That even the best relationship has moments of trial and difficulty. That's okay. That's okay. And that's a piece, I think, of saying Yizkor, is to forgive, to let go, to be consistently 4 times a year lightening the load. This, to hearken back to Yom Kippur, and this is probably where I'll leave you, which is another moment we say Yizkor. Sometimes preparing letters of apology, I did this year. It's a really amazing experience. I wrote a letter to someone over the summer to apologize for my behavior professionally and personally. And I don't think, from all appearances, the person has forgiven me, but it's allowed me to let go. Yeah. One rabbi whose congregation I was part of used to say that anger is a kind of debtor's prison. You're holding this debt, or you're forcing this other person to hold a debt against you, but to do so, you have to be the guard. You're both stuck there. So all of this, love and difficulty and the consistent application of effort as the Omer, and the struggle and the frustration and the energy that goes into love, we call out to, we honor in a few moments with Yizkor. We honor those who are close to us. We honor those who taught us. We honor those who gave us stomach aches, even if maybe that was always, that's one person. That's good. That's good. That's an acknowledgement of the reality of another person. Sometimes the hardest part of love or allowing someone to love you is being fully seen. And sometimes what we want more than anything else is for another person to know us as we are. Our anxieties, our passions, our concerns, our oddnesses, our loves, our desires. We want to be seen in full. And maybe as you say Yizkor, you allow that person, or think of the times that those persons saw you in full, and you allow them to be seen in full, not as perfect creations, but as real people.